Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Welcome to the Edge of Sports podcast. I'm Dave Zirin. This week we come to you from occupied Washington, D.C. to speak to organizer, media maven, my co-radio host on the amazing WPFW 98.3 Pacifica here in Washington, D.C., and someone who is just ubiquitous at every demonstration, always holding that cell phone camera, always asking dozens and dozens of people, why are you here? And getting the most incredible, incredible answers. You'll find out why he's a special dude in a second. His name is Chuck Modiano. He'll be on in just a bit to talk about the massive demonstration to free DC that took place on Saturday, met in Malcolm X Park, marched to the White House, untold thousands of people, and for me, my goodness, was it the cure for the jackboot blues. Also, after we talk to Chuck, I am going to read a piece that Chuck and I put together about the night patrols in Washington, D.C., the intrepid people, and we've done it, me and Chuck have done it, going out at 3 a.m. to actually look at how people are being treated by the police, by ICE, and all the rest once most of the residents have gone home. And I didn't even talk about the unhoused people being disappeared left and right from this town. But it's the night patrol that's really standing in the way of this getting worse, even though they're putting themselves at great risk. You're going to learn all about them and learn how you can safely, but also urgently, start organizing night patrols in your cities, especially y'all in Chicago and Baltimore, living under the threat of occupation. So this is just the stupidest slide into fascism ever. People in Chicago waiting for their own government to invade them. I mean, it's just an absolute, the farce of this moment boggles my mind. But hey, enough about me. Enough about me. Let's listen to Chuck Modiano, the man himself, about what happened in Washington, D.C. this past Saturday and his analysis of the state of things. Let's go to him after this quick word from the sponsor of this podcast, The Nation Magazine. We'll be back right after this with a quick word from Edge of Sports. Hey, everybody out there. This is Dave Zirin with the Edge of Sports podcast. People got to know that we put this podcast on with elbow grease and bubble gum on a weekly basis. And we're proud of the work that we do. We love it, but we can't do it without support from you, the listener. So please go to patreon.com/edgeofsportspod and support the podcast. That's patreon.com/edgeofsportspod. Any little bit you might give to support the podcast actually makes a huge difference to the work we're trying to do. That's patreon.com/edgeofsportspod. We appreciate you. Make no mistake about it. And now, back to the Edge of Sports podcast. Okay, as promised, here we are on the Edge of Sports podcast. This is somebody I've wanted to have on for a long time. If you follow my work to any extent, you know who this man is because we've done stuff on video, we've done radio, we're looking into film, we've just collaborated on some very important issues, frankly tending far more to the political end of things than the sports end of things, even though I'll tell you, man, this guy does know his sports. But we're here actually to talk about Free DC and the movement and the incredible march that took place on Saturday. Let me introduce him to you all. If you don't know his name, you should. Chuck Modiano. How you doing, Chuck?
I'm doing great, DZ. Always great to speak with you about sports, about politics, about revolution. You name the subject, it's always wonderful.
Man, thanks for that. This time, I really want to narrow in on Saturday. Talk to us a little bit about your impressions from the time you entered Malcolm X Park to the end of the march itself down by Lafayette Square. Or maybe knowing you were above and beyond even that, going somewhere after that, because I know how you roll. Give us your impression of the Free DC demonstration and the day that you experienced on Saturday.
Glorious. In a word, it was glorious. It was a glorious resistance. Every group that I've ever filmed in DC over the years, I do a lot of filming at protests, they were there. It was a coming together of people at Malcolm X Park on so many intersecting levels, and that we want a free DC. We want to get rid of this occupation that is in DC, that is in Palestine, that is all across America, but do it in a way that we can be useful and helpful to other cities where this occupation is coming next. So
huge Baltimore contingent, of course.
Huge Baltimore contingent. We had some people from here, from Chicago. Mm. We had people all over, but we had DC people here. And people have to know that even though yesterday was, I guess from a size perspective, the greatest march we've had in the last 3 weeks since the executive order, there have been people out here daily fighting back. There have been protests, often Free DC. People know about those. I would recommend people go to the Free DC calendar because protests are daily, often two or three times a day. Harriet's Wildest Dreams has been having rapid response teams that Harriet's Wildest Dreams and Free DC have been
And Go-Go, too.
And planning for months. Then you have these Go-Go protests bringing in new people and having fun. And there's no law, especially in D.C., that you can't have fun and then resist. Because Go-Go has a long-term resistance in D.C.
And has over the last several years, been part of the anti-gentrification movement in D.C. Yes. Because of efforts to quiet down the Go-Go. Which, of course, people see as not just quieting down the Go-Go, but, of course, the soul of this city, racial gentrification, and so many other things. So Go-Go really is symbolic. It's not just like, say, I mean, I would love it if I went to Memphis and they played some blues and rock and roll at protests. God bless them if they did that. But Go-Go actually has a, I think, a more explicit political history than most music in most areas. I really do.
And I think you might be referring to a few years ago was the Amplified Noise Act. Go-Go became noise once there were enough white people who moved into D.C., gentrified D.C., and what was previously culturally the heartbeat of D.C. now became noise. And Go-Go came back and fought that act down. But you're right, the roots are gentrification. There were all Go-Go trucks during the George Floyd uprising throughout D.C. And then there's an aspect of it is you are not going to steal my joy. As one person I interviewed during the protest, they said, you are not going to steal our joy. We're going to have a party right here on the street. We're outside and we're going to fight this occupation at the same time. So you're seeing a myriad of protests and cop watches that are going on between noon and 4 a.m. Don't let me forget about the veterans who are stationed at Union Station, a group called Flair and other veterans, and they are going in front of ICE and at those checkpoints and telling them what they think of them and harassing them. I use the word harass, heckling them in a way that other people might get arrested, but it's a bad look if you arrest vets, and we appreciate those vets too. And this is all to say yesterday was a culmination of a tireless activism and resistance in the last 3 weeks.
Mm. You know, one of the common refrains on the far right of these protests is that it's all white people, which, A, I think is really funny because they love demonstrations that are all white people when it's January 6th.
Yeah.
Or when it's people in white hoods. But they're going to say all white people. Now, and I also, but I hear people respond to that who are on our side, not DC people, but people who are on our side who say, well, it should be all white people because black people were in the streets, George Floyd, time for white people to step up. Sometimes it's black people came out to vote for Kamala Harris. White people need to step up. We've all heard variations of the argument. But I hate that argument because it erases the very real black leadership that is existing and building and at the heart of the Free DC movement. That's my take on that. Mm-hmm. I'd be curious as to yours.
Well, it's funny because it was in my timeline from these right-wingers, white-wingers, whatever you want to call them, and it's echoing some absurd stuff Stephen Miller, the racial justice expert of all experts, has said when he said, it's a bunch of elderly white hippies, I believe.
90-year-old hippies.
90-year-old elderly white hippies, which is funny because I interviewed a few elderly white hippies to get their take, but I also interviewed a lot of black residents who laughed when they said it. The truth is 80% of D.C. is against this protest. That's black D.C., that's white D.C., that's Latinx D.C., that's Asian D.C., all across racial lines. And if you actually are from D.C., which these white-wing critics are not, you would know this because you'd be out. And then that protest, the protest and activism in D.C. is black-led. And a lot of people don't understand that because, you know, D.C. is a different representation. So if I'm in Seattle, I'm in Portland, and they have some great protest scenes, but those are predominantly white cities. And whereas that's not the case here, and people can't wrap their heads around that you're going to have black-led protests, and then they called white people to come in because there is a privilege aspect. I can get away with doing things. Dave, you could get away with doing things. These vets could get away with doing things that if the black protesters surrounded ICE, they'd be arrested, okay? So let's be clear about
arrested
it.
At best.
At best.
I mean, the violence that could be unleashed in that situation could,
right.
I mean, and not just by ICE, but, and this is a follow-up question, I think one of the things people are missing about this, and I think it's an important lesson for other places, is that, yes, it's ICE, yes, it's the National Guard, yes, it's DHS, but it's also that MPD, the Metro Police Department, is acting under a federal authority to just be off the leash.
Yes.
And so it's not like seeing a cop is any kind of a relief right now in D.C. And sometimes it actually even feels more threatening because we know that they feel so unrestrained at this moment. And this is a police department that has had, of course, issues with police violence way before Donald Trump took office. Let's talk about the people occupying this city. So that's my MPD analysis. What are you seeing more broadly?
I want to answer that MPD analysis. My closing remark of what we were previously saying is they're confusing white solidarity with black DC in tandem with white saviorism. Those are two very different things. And from the outside, they don't know what it is. But if they lived in D.C., they would know what it is. They would know it is interracial solidarity. But to your point, listen, I covered the George Floyd uprising, and MPD was terrible. And some people are not going to want to hear some of what I'm going to say. Because Trump is a monster. I think your audience, DZ, could all agree on that, right?
Yes.
Trump is, like, we don't need to spend too much time on how he's an authoritarian fascist monster. I'm gonna move forward like we get that. But I have to tell you something. I was really impacted in 2020 covering the George Floyd uprising intently because when Trump's goons left, and Trump's goons like to beat you in broad daylight when it's light out, and once the curfew goes in, instituted by Mayor Bowser, by the way, working in tandem, then they started beating on people. But once Trump's goons left, Bowser's MPD goons weren't much better. I'm telling you the truth. No, people don't want to hear this. But talk to any black activist in D.C., cover them. They will tell you the same thing. And I'll go a step farther than that. You could go 5 years ago to a September 1st memo when she chastised Trump's people. Michael Sherwin was the prosecutor for saying you're not prosecuting hard enough on the people MPD kettled. So if you want to talk about oppression, I don't know if MPD's been unleashed. I think they've always been unleashed. If you want to talk about MPD, we got a lot of attention when Trump, the fascist, pardoned Terrence Sutton, who murdered Caron Hilton, who's a convicted murderer and a rogue cop, and he got all this heat, which he should have, rightfully so. But when MPD took that same man back on the force, now they're going to give him $250,000 back in back pay. We're not hearing about it. So what we need to do is have people who have the righteous pushback against Trump do the same thing when Trump is not in power. But when Democrats do it or when Mayor Bowser is in collaboration, we have to be just as angry because that oppression does not disappear.
Yeah, damn right. Speak it.
Right?
Damn right. Now, the thing.
Hey, you want to say that?
You're welcome to come on the show.
This
is Edge of Sports, the podcast. My name is Dave Zirin, right for the Nation. It's Chuck Modiano. He was at the heart of those protests yesterday. Just what are your thoughts about the military occupation of our town? You don't even have to give your name. We're just taking advantage of the fact that you have a good spirit and walk by us. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I wish for global liberation, and this is bringing it. I just moved here 4 weeks ago, but I love this city so far, and I would say that what's happening right now is bringing things right home. You know, people who, I don't know, maybe have never experienced oppression, especially in the form of being over-policed.
Yes.
Or over any kind of law enforcement. Yes.
We're talking about a white person wake-up call is what you're saying.
You know, yeah. And so it, just being here at home, I hope it inspires people to also understand everything that's been constantly happening all around the globe when it comes to fighting for liberation. I hope that it can, inspire those thoughts.
Let me take this back to you right here. I want to talk about the question of Bowser, because you raised her, Mayor Bowser. I'm not going to go into it too deep because people know the news that she's been, you know, very welcoming to Trump. One of the interesting things about the march was how, for me, and I'm curious what you think of this observation, is how irrelevant she seemed that day to the social process that was taking place.
That's right.
You know, thinking about Baltimore, where Brandon Scott, not without fault, I'm not saying he's not, but the Baltimore mayor, the fact that he went to the bus station to give a speech and see off the buses that were coming to D.C. saying, defend our city. You know, he's making himself a part of the process of defending Baltimore. We don't feel like we have a mayor that defends us. And what was so good about Saturday is for the first time, it felt like people were saying, okay, we accept that. So then what's our next chess move?
Right.
Not having a mayor.
That's right. The feeling was, based on historical evidence, we're not waiting for Mayor Bowser to come save us. And I've heard that sentiment many times. And as someone who covers protests, it's not new. I already mentioned the contradictions of 2020 George Floyd uprising, where there was collaboration between Trump and Republicans and Bowser. I didn't mention that there was something similar when D.C. City Council was trying to overturn a criminal justice code and make it more progressive based on evidence-based research that was going to be less punitive towards young black kids in D.C. I say young black kids because like 90% of young people locked up are young black kids, and that she vetoed a unanimous D.C. council decision in favor of Republicans and many Democrats on the congressional level. She did that. The council overrode her veto. Maybe they're not aware of the fact that the Lauren Boebert and right-wingers wanted to send her to a hearing in 2024 when there was the GW campaign saying you're not being punitive enough on those protesters. So what happened is the night before the hearing, MPD raided that protest violently.
And then she got out of the congressional hearing. I'm sure no deals were made behind the scenes there.
And there were 33 arrests. So I'm just saying that there's a history here, and that history leads to the collaboration that we see, which many people are saying, oh, she's a traitor. Oh, I can't believe she turned her back. But what the DC activists have been telling me for years is this is who she is, and it's consistent. And people don't want to hear about it, nor do they want to hear about, well, let me just say this, DZ.
I don't want to stay too long on Bowser.
Okay. I want to move off Bowser, topic. But I want to say something about Dems, because I've heard this refrain. If everyone just voted differently in November, and that is just, you're not the case. Voting is one tool in a tool shed. The truth of the matter is that when Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York, sent federal troops, the National Guard, to the New York City subway to really harass fare evaders, it did not elicit the outrage that when Trump does it. The fact is that when Atlanta had a Stop Cop City movement and the local Democrats in that movement did everything to crush the movement, even spent millions to crush a referendum vote, the most democratic possible outcome to Stop Cop City, those were Democrats who worked in connection with the right-wing Republicans to do that.
While those same Democrats were in the process of trying to indict and imprison Trump for the Georgia issue.
That's exactly
those two things were happening at the same time.
That's, That's
were
exactly
so striking
right.
to me. I will say, though, Chuck, that I think what's happening in D.C. and what's threatening in Baltimore is different than Cop City and is different from the National Guard because of the question of permanence and because of the question of being like, this is your new reality under our gun. The in and out thing is inexcusable because it lays the groundwork for what we're seeing right now. But what we're seeing right now, I think, does signify the necessity for different organizing and a different kind of response.
I'm by no means am I not suggesting, I'm not one of those people who says everything's the same. There are things that Trump does unique to Trump, okay? But there are 61 people from that Cop City who are still facing charges as terrorists when they were just at a concert. And what I know is that if Trump had done that, it would get national outrage. I also know that the Democrats in 2024 and 2025 at Police Appreciation Week chastised Republicans for not having enough in their budget, and they were trying to defund the police.
Yep.
We're going to have more policing. So what I'm saying is we want to point out that the what's different about Trump. But we also want to point out, if people think the solution is just get Trump's people out of D.C. and everything magically gets better, they would be wrong in that analysis. And the right analysis is what everyone is doing around the city besides Bowser. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. It's just the Trump thing and the Democratic thing. It also requires like some three-dimensional karate thinking a little bit, because the what Trump is, when I talk about permanence being the most dangerous thing, it's not because of the Republican Party that it scares me. It's because of the Democratic Party. Because where's the evidence that they roll back the most fascistic shit that the Republicans put forward? You think about Bush, you think about the Obama promises of closing Guantanamo day one, the repeal of the Patriot Act, things we expected and then did not receive. Meanwhile, Trump on day one is putting a hammer to every hard-fought reform we've ever had. So this is what we don't have in this country is symmetrical warfare on the political level.
And that's why I thought
Saturday was a great example of that.
Exactly. The answer is the people who are organizing, who are doing cop watches. If I tell you about it, seven different people said they're not going to save us, we must save us. That is real. And so there are some positives. You're seeing boycotts. You're seeing cop watches. You're seeing community in action come together in various ways, and mutual aid what happens when you realize your politicians won't fight on your behalf. And I'm not saying all politicians. Denise Lewis George is out here in the street fighting with people.
That's a D.C. council person,
DC
everybody.
Council person.
One of the very few speaking out right now.
I think Eleanor Holmes Norton had a strong statement that was come out. There are a few people, but the point is it's not enough. And when I say this, sometimes people get mad at me. Why don't you spend all your time on Trump? Well, if I'm a Knicks fan, DZ, you're a Knicks fan. If I'm at the Knicks game and I don't see my team playing defense, you know, the crowd's going to start booing your team. Say, play better defense, because we got to stop them. I understand what they're about. They're trying to beat us. But you're not playing any defense. I need you to see you hustling, and you're not hustling. So I think that's where you're seeing the root of it. And if you're not playing defense, well, D.C. will play defense and show the rest of the country how it's done.
Okay, two more questions. You've been incredibly patient with your time, and I appreciate that very much. And also, I want you to know and our listeners to know that after the break, I am going to be reading the column that you and I wrote together so we can have an audio about how people are building what you call the cop watches. I call them the cop watches, or I call them the night patrols, just because I heard somebody call them that and I thought it was cool. I'd love to see t-shirts, night patrol.
Yeah, I like
night patrol.
Night patrol
for the people.
Yeah.
But it's it can't just be night patrol, because that could be dodgy. Community policing and the like. But I thought, so I'm going to be reading people that. My question, though, and you're like so unique to be able to answer this, I want to know about continuity from the Black Lives Matter movement to the Free DC movement.
Yeah.
This city, like in many other cities, there were certainly fissures between people in the movements. That can sometimes be the government doing that. That can sometimes just be human personalities. That can be the intensity of the struggle. But, you know, there were fissures here, as in many, many cities. Do you see people coming back together around this issue? I've heard in Baltimore that's happening, and I was curious if you saw any of those processes in D.C. We're talking about movement continuity, because, like, we always have to remind people, it's not like George Floyd's, the uprising was 1920, it was 2020.
Right. Absolutely. And I think I left out in my rebellion here at D.C. against Trump Alliance here, and that is in other states as well. They've been doing a lot of work. And you see the different organizations showing up at each other's rallies, which is hasn't always happened in D.C., you know? We see that. So if there's the Go-Go rally, you're going to see Harriet's Wildest Dreams there. You're going to see D.C. against Trump Alliance there. You're going to see different speakers, and I've never seen so many.
I've seen white folks who might be hearing Go-Go for the first time.
Yeah, it's a D.C. thing. I did not know it really until I moved to D.C. from New York City.
I just mean solidarity with the Go-Go among white folks is necessarily something that you see.
Yeah. And so, you know, that solidarity is very mixed. And I have to be honest with you, when I first started realizing it, when I was at the George Washington University encampment there, which had all nine universities at GW, that was a nine university protest. People don't realize that outside of D.C. They were all protesting for Free Palestine, but their own university's complicity in that. But if you looked in the crowd, you saw elements from all these other protests, from the George Floyd protests. You would have the George Floyd protesters who weren't necessarily college movement there. You would have Black Alliance for Peace there, who saw the shared understanding on an international level. The police terror movement, who was against police terror, was with the Free Palestine movement. And you see all of these movements coming together. And I look at it as a series of dominoes that have been built. And let me give you sort of one example. When I started covering the Free Palestine protest in October 23, and we had tens of thousands in the streets, I got something in my Twitter feed I never got before. They were saying, this is a fake video. There can't be this many people outside. How can this be possible? Because what I'm getting on CNN is completely the opposite of what I'm seeing. I'm like, well, maybe you didn't realize the movement that's been building for years, because it wasn't on CNN, but it was in the streets. May 2021, it was Sheikh Jarrah. It was in the streets. George Floyd was in the streets. But you have these movements and they're not captured. But everything that happens is a series of dominoes, not unlike the civil rights movement itself.
I've never felt more pressure on the world of independent media right now. And I've never felt like the mainstream media has been this pathetic, this craven, as we're doing this news of CBS demanding that the U.S. Open finals, when Trump showed up, to edit out, live editing out, all booing, not showing any facial expressions. That didn't stop people from booing. That video is out there. Ha ha. Moving on from that, my last question for you, question is, of course, there are cynics of every political stripe. And you might argue that resistance people, left people, anti-racist people, whatever you want to call them, have more than earned the right of their cynicism in recent years. Yeah. That being said, one of the responses from Saturday that I received, just from a couple of people, but sure, I did receive them, was of the line of, what's the point? It's going to be the same when you wake up on Sunday and Monday. Where is the change? It looks more like a parade than anything that has the significance to move and change the needle and move the needle in any way towards our side moving forward. What do you, I'm sure you've heard that too.
Well, as someone who covers protests, I hear that all the time.
Yeah. What do you say? What is your response to that? And please root it in what we saw Saturday, not in what protests can mean in general.
Yeah, well, what we saw Saturday is people coming together. And yeah, let me just tell you, on the base level, I think people who do that look at things in a myopic linear way. Like, they need to see point A, and then it leads to justice. And justice does not work like that. If you look at the civil rights movement, 12 years, I mean, you could argue it's much longer, but let's just look at the 12 years to the Civil Rights Act. It was a series of dominoes, and if you looked at individually, you could consider failures at the time, and every domino hits another domino. How many people have gone to a rally and have been radicalized from that rally and have changed the rest of their life? How many people have met someone else at that rally, connected, and then that rally is responsible indirectly for the correct connection and the organizing that came out of that rally? There are so many levels to how a protest can be a domino and affect something else. So people who look at it in a linear way, I just don't think are looking at the big picture. Can I give you one non-example from yesterday?
Here's my
I've heard this big ups to Chris Smalls, who's in the union movement. And I've heard this critique that him going to on the Handala to go to Free Palestine,
the Gaza flotilla.
It's performative. I don't know what it's going to do and all of these things. And I thought that was very myopic. First of all, I thought it was wrong because he risked his life going there. So let's just start right there.
It is kind of hilarious to think someone wants to increase their clout by getting on a flotilla and floating to Gaza.
Yeah. But maybe what they don't know is 2 weeks after Chris Smalls came back, San Diego Council became the first union in America to have a strong statement for Free Palestine and cited Chris Smalls' inspiration in there.
There now, it is.
So the connection was made, but he didn't necessarily go to say, well, I'm doing this so we can have a South San Diego Union Council. But it emanated from that. And when you're myopic and when you need to know the answer before, ahead of time, you miss the big picture. And that's a great example I can give you.
You know why I love that answer, Chuck? Because it also speaks to the fact that the answer to the question, what did Saturday accomplish, will actually be told in the days and weeks ahead.
Bam.
And I promise you that when we talk about this, and we talk every week, but I promise with you, when we talk about this in the weeks ahead, we're going to be able to point at things that would not have happened Bam. If not for that demonstration. So, in the words of Rob Riggle from the movie Step Brothers, pa-pow! Great job, Chuck. Thanks so much for joining us,
man. Appreciate it, DZ.
We'll be back right after this with an audio narrative written actually by Chuck and me about the night patrols, the cop watches, and why you should do the same in your city if the federal army comes to town. We are back on the Edge of Sports podcast. I want to share with you some thoughts that were put together by the person you just heard, Chuck Modiano, and me, Dave Zirin, for a piece we put together that was entitled The DC Night Patrols Are Showing Cities How to Fight Trump's Occupation. And I'm reading this out because I heard a story recently that warmed my heart more than anything, maybe, in all the years I've been doing this kind of work. I heard that there was a group in Chicago of young people that came together and they all pulled up the article I'm about to read to you on their phones. And they all read it in a circle, a dozen of them. And then they had a group discussion about what it would mean for them to do a night patrol and how they would do it and who they would organize with. Who they would solidarize with. I've never liked that word. How about practice solidarity with? So I want to read this to you because you know what? Not everybody's a reader out there. We got mad auditory listeners, multiple intelligences and the like. So let me read you what Chuck and I put together about what is a night patrol. Okay, look, when the night comes, it is not just the National Guard, ICE, and a jumpy police department walking the streets of D.C., in an otherwise eerily quiet city, the people are present as well. Armed only with cell phones, medical kits, and the confidence to assert their dwindling rights, groups of local residents trail and record Trump's occupation forces. They're known as the night patrols. These night patrols watch over the city to ensure that people are protected from state violence, false arrest, abduction, and harassment. Failing that, their goal is to document the constitutional violations or brutality they witness so people can see the truths about the occupation that a compliance largely incurious media are not showing. Their footage has gone viral and exposed the mainstream media's lies about how happy DC residents are to see the South Carolina National Guard marching by their kids' elementary school. There is no centralized night patrol planning committee. People in different groups don't necessarily know each other. But everyone with whom we spoke was either experienced in this kind of work through previous cop watch trainings or are compelled by what is happening to play their part in making sure the foot soldiers of the surveillance state know they too are being surveilled. While we do not know the number of unconstitutional jailings that have happened over the last 2 weeks, the angry reactions of federal judges when these cases come before the bench speak to how violently careless, amateurish, and dangerous Trump's police state's conduct has been. This is unsurprising, given that the chief D.C. prosecutor is another Fox News incompetent, the sloppy, allegedly soused Jeanine Pirro. We now have in D.C. a military fascism run as cheaply and poorly as one of Trump's failed casinos. If Trump were the fascist leader of Italy in the 1920s, the trains would not have run on time. Unfortunately, the Trump administration has also seized control of D.C.'s Union Station, so set your watch to the coming ineptitude that's already begun with viral videos of them preventing kids on their way to school from leaving Union Station unless they have ID. God help us. It's maddening, but people are pushing back, and the night patrols are on the front lines. Every night patrol is different. One volunteer told us that it, quote, fluctuates depending on events and community needs. Different crews have their own rhythms, end quote. Sometimes that means groups are small, maybe just three or four people. And other times it means flooding the streets with rallies that turn into patrols when the speeches are done. Above all else, it is a commitment to peaceful, legal, and direct confrontation. The people who do night patrol work are serious, and if you volunteer, they expect you to know what you are doing or listen to those who do. We spoke to night patroller Ash Lazarus Orr, who described the patrols as consisting of a lot of young people, a lot of people of color, queer and trans folks, people who have been directly impacted by policing, and folks with street medic backgrounds. It skews toward people who already know what it's like to be criminalized, end quote. These efforts are supported by work going on across the city, including cop watch trainings, court watch trainings, know your rights guides, handbooks on filming the police, and jail support by the Migrant Solidarity Mutual Aid Network. Go to The Nation magazine, find this article. There are links to everything I just said for more information embedded in the text. The patrols do more than just bear witness. Orr has had to bandage terrified people beaten by and fleeing D.C.'s Metropolitan Police Department, returning home at sunrise with his clothes stained with blood. Another time, Orr said he saw officers trying to arrest a man over a burned-out taillight, quote, while his two young children sat alone in the car crying, end quote. Thankfully, he explained, our group managed to put pressure on these officers, phone cameras out and ready, and they eventually let the man and his children go. That happens more often than you'd think. Weapons and a free pass to beat people doesn't mean that they have the resolve to do this awful, dirty work when confronted with people with cameras. Recently, a night patrol captured ICE and the MPD arresting without cause a black corporate attorney and West Point graduate named Paul Bryant at 2 a.m. in Logan Circle. The police and feds on the scene asked his name and why he was out at that hour. Bryant refused to answer, as I think we all thought would be his right, and he was arrested. He was released the next day after the judge excoriated the D.C. prosecutors. A lawsuit is now expected. The night patrols are clearly making a difference. Many of the occupying forces have shifted their tactics from walking around and harassing people to a quote-unquote jump-out strategy in which they stay in their cars until screeching to a halt and storming out to accost people. Their selections are, no doubt, driven by shameless racial profiling. No rights are read, no badges shown. When it's ICE, their faces are covered. These terrifying quote-unquote jump-outs are not new to Washington, D.C. The D.C. Justice Lab has long called them D.C.'s scarier version of stop and frisk. They are supposed to be unconstitutional. Yet it's a sign of the effectiveness of the night patrols that they have to resort to the jump out tactic in order to avoid people's questions, cameras, and assertions of rights. The armed occupiers aren't defending the Constitution. They fear it. While one tactic is to work in smaller groups like OR, another has been to mobilize cop watches or defend the district go-go shows in order to draw in people, especially youth, for larger showings of strength. Go-go is the native music of Washington, D.C., one attendee told us. The music has been used for our resistance time and time again. The attendee added that there is joy in the revolution and that it is important to show the occupation forces that they are unafraid. The police are everywhere. We are outside. We are not scared of you. This is our home. End quote. At one such event, Frankie Sebrin, an organizer with Harriet's Wildest Dreams, said, "We need to keep black people in this city safe. We need to keep youth, migrants, and our unhoused people safe, because those are the people who this fascist system is targeting." A couple Saturdays back, the DC Against Trump Coalition, DCAT, started a rally at 14th and U in one of DC's curfew zones, where minors are barred from gathering after 8 p.m., allowing police to target black youths as soon as the sun goes down. The event ended with groups of protesters patrolling different areas of D.C. up until 4 a.m. This is becoming its own method of organizing. During the last week, the night patrols have grown in number and frequency. They often occur after mobilizing rallies from organizations and coalitions like Free DC, Harriet's Wildest Dreams, DCAT, and the independent DC media group Liberation Lens. It can be dizzying keeping up, but Free DC's calendar, linked here, is a good start. This week, a group of fed-up military veterans associated with the group FLARE USA, which stands for Liberation and Resistance Everywhere, have joined in on the overnight cop watch efforts. "We are here to disrupt ICE raids," retired Marine Matthew Gordon told us. "ICE is kidnapping people off the streets. We are doing everything we possibly can to make their lives miserable." These vets go to ICE checkpoints and pepper the agents with harsh questions on camera about the immorality and illegality of their actions until they leave. When FLARE vets approach National Guard members, they employ a calmer, less confrontational strategy, educating them about their rights to challenge orders they think could be illegal. Gordon said this was much more effective since, quote, "most are much younger and don't want to be here." "We feel that deploying the U.S. military to the streets of Washington, D.C. to police its own citizens is unconstitutional," former Marine Gordon told us. "We took an oath to support and defend this country against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That is our oath, and that oath does not expire." End quote. There's a common and familiar refrain at protests, which in D.C. has become more than a slogan. It's an organizing principle. Ty Hobson Powell at the Defend the District Go-Go rally repeated it to us as he explained the importance of grassroots organizing. Quote, "It is us that will save us. It is the message that we have been saying on the streets for years as frontline organizers who are most invested in this work. We will save us. They won't save us," end quote. Local government institutions certainly will not, as Washington's Mayor Muriel Bowser has made perfectly clear. Even though 80% of the city feels less safe since the occupation began, Bowser is in open collaboration with Trump, praising him and extending the invitation for what she pointedly calls the surge, and undercutting not only the people she represents, but also other cities like Chicago and Baltimore, facing down this regime's threats to make urban militarization the new normal. The failures of Bowser and the city government to stand up for its residents means Powell's words have never rang truer. No one is coming to save the people of D.C., and yet no one should bet against the people of D.C. saving themselves. "What does keep us safe is people showing up for one another," said Orr. "Cop watch, night patrols, mutual aid, these are ways communities step in to protect each other when institutions only cause harm. when we document, de-escalate, offer medical care, or simply stand behind someone in crisis, we're proving that safety comes from solidarity, not surveillance, end quote. Doing this kind of work empowers communities, and the videos expose the truth of life under occupation more effectively than 1,000 empty speeches. This isn't about individuals playing hero, said Barr. It's about collective accountability and care. The most important thing is to start where you are, with the skills and resources you already have. Well, that's all the time we have for this week from Occupied DC. I'm Dave Zirin. Thank you so much to my guest, Chuck Modiano. Thank you so much to the producer of this podcast, David Tigaboo. For everybody out there listening, we're easy enough to find, edgeofsports.com. You can find us all over the place. Tell your friend to subscribe to the pod. Pass it on to other people. You got to spread the word to break through the noise. And right now, I don't think of anything is more important than the idea of our cities being under an iron heel, being just the new way we do things. That is unacceptable. That is why we did this pod this week. That's why the opening weekend of the NFL season has never felt not only more irrelevant, but more corrosive. More on that next week. And it's just great to hear from everybody out there, frankly, who's been getting in touch saying that they missed the pod. Sorry we've taken some time off. It's just like that sometimes. Yo, for everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. Big ups to The Nation magazine, about to hit its 160th birthday. We are out of here. Peace.